1977, George Lucas formed a legacy.
The Force is with me, and I am with the Force.
Inspired by mythology, his saga has become a passion for many.
You must feel the Force around you.
His legend has become our story.
It's true. All are.
One of resistance.
We are the spark that will light the fire that will bring the First Order down.
Rebellion.
Rebellion is built on hope.
And redemption.
I am a Jedi, like my father before.
This is Star Wars Reactions.
Remember, the Force will be with you, always.
Well, hello everybody and welcome. Welcome to Star Wars Reactions. We are excited to be back after a unexpected two-week hiatus, but we're back. We're going to have a blast. We got a great lineup, great show for you. So let's not waste any time. My name is Aaron Harris, and joining me is the awesome co-host, my buddy, my friend, the Chewie to my Han, the David Motters. David, what's up, brother?
Just great to be back on with you, buddy. I love the Han and Chewie one. We've joked before on previous episodes that when you've switched it around and I'm the really short one and you're the tall one, it kind of is a little confusing. But I love it when you nail it, buddy. And just glad to be back on. I know we've been off for a little bit, but I'm especially excited to record tonight with our special guest. I'm just so thankful he's on with us, but I'll let you do the intros.
Absolutely perfect. And for those of you trying to visually picture me and David, just think the 80s movie Twins. He's Schwarzenegger, I'm DeVito. That's pretty much how it works. I'm the short, fat one. He's the tall, lanky one. So but that's just how it rolls around here. But let's get going here. Let's talk some Star Wars. We got a great show. We're doing one of our reactions chats tonight, and it's going to be awesome because joining us is there's just no way to say it. He's a true giant in trading cards. He knows his stuff. He is in all the circles. He's the host of the Rebel Base Card Podcast, and he's just an all-around nice guy. Joining us is the incredible Greg McLaughlin. Greg, welcome to Star Wars Reactions.
Oh my gosh, that's quite an intro, and I like being a giant at like 5'7". I really appreciate that.
Well, I'm 5'6", so everybody's a giant to me.
Can I also say it's so nice to be able to hear, you know, because a lot of times when you do your co-host introductions, sometimes everybody kind of mixes it up a little bit, and it's really fun to kind of hear that kind of behind the scenes a little bit. It's really fun, and it's something I kind of enjoy sometimes when people go, all right, what are they going to do this week? So that was a nice privilege to get to hear the behind the scenes intro from where I am sitting at this point.
Well, we are glad you're able to join us and hear the intro, because if you want a little bit of behind the scenes, I make that up on the fly every week. I never know what I'm going to say till it comes out of my mouth. So
a little behind the curtains. I like it.
Exactly. So welcome to the show. So like I said, you are all about trading cards. You are my go-to guy for trading card questions, and you have built such an awesome community around Rebel Base Card and around trading cards and the Star Wars trading card app and those apps which Tops have put out, which are just fun to play on. We want to dig into your fandom tonight and talk All about. Right. Fandom. We're going to talk about your trading cards as well. But let's start by talking about fandom. How and when did you first get into fandom?
You know, it's an interesting question when you talk about fandom, because, you know, as an old fart, as some of the OG, of course, we go back to the original trilogy. But I want to say that the fandom part begins probably around, I would say, the early Coffee with Kenobi era, when you get into The Force Awakens around 2015, because although I had been listening to podcasts since almost after the turn of the millennium, it really wasn't until you knew that a movie was coming that I was like, oh yeah, because I listen to a lot of tech podcasts. It's kind of what I do as my second job. But I never really, it was one of those like, oh yeah, I should probably be listening to Star Wars podcast. And so when you're searching for one, Coffee with Kenobi comes up. You know, we all sort of have that history.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of where I got into the homegrown fandom and started to follow, you know, some podcasts and get to know people that were in. I know that we're saying goodbye to the Star Wars Report. And, you know, we know podcasts like Rebels, you know, the Rebel, was it RFR, Rebel Force Radio?
Yeah, and these other ones, Radio.
Cantina Cast and all that. So, and then you guys, is, of course, kind of go back there as well. So some of this was, some of you guys were my first introduction to social fandom, as well as just, you know, what we all did as kids was collect the cards and the comics and, you know, follow the books and so forth. So I think I have much you guys to thank as much as anything else, because then you start seeing, you know, regular folk produced content and getting to know these people and buying the merch and kind of making these early on connections that several years later, when I decided to jump in and produce content, you know, they become your natural touchstones, your cornerstones to what you would do and how you would do it. It's interesting because I was listening to some of the earlier podcasts and trying to figure out what they were going to ask me. But now you're kind of thinking like, oh, wow, I wasn't quite ready for that one. But when you start kind of piecing it together and saying things out loud, that's where it all kind of starts, I guess.
Really cool, man. So next one, what was it about Star Wars that appealed to you as a fan?
I think it's very easy, and this is one I was kind of ready for. I was trying to think of when Star Wars first came out, and it's funny, we go back to Coffee with Kenobi, but Dan Zare and I both actually saw Star Wars at the drive-in. That's our first time to see Star Wars. It's weird that we have that connection. But as a seven-year-old seeing Star Wars, right, you're normally, at that point, you're kind of pulled along. Whatever the family is going to watch, you're going to watch. And I remember thinking about Christmas before, like Christmas 76 and Christmas 77, 78, completely different, you know, whereas like I'm a regular kid. I'm like, I got the motorcycles, I've got the matchboxes, I got all that kind of stuff. But when Star Wars comes out, and we know we didn't get the Kenner early on, but it's like, that's all we wanted later on. And I remember once Star Wars came out and I saw that, you know, first time, like I said, in a drive-in, it just clicked. And when you're thinking about it, it's like, what would a kid want of that age? It's like, spaceships, laser guns, laser swords, lots of actions. It really just triggered everything. And I think, you know, early on, I kind of think like everything kind of crystallized at that moment for me. And of course, we had that great run of like late 70s, early 80s, all those movies back to back. Not since probably the early millennium with, you know, the Harry Potters and the Matrix and the prequels, have we had, and Lord of the Rings, have we had that kind of like boom, 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 boom. And I think that just kind of, it just really sang to a young kid that, you know, of course we didn't have YouTube and the internet. We just had that, but it just really captured the imagination, and the toys and things were there to meet me. It was so nice. Everything was just there and happened at once in the cards and the comics. And it just sort of like, yeah, I'm in now, man. And it's been a fun ride since.
Very cool. Very cool. I love how everything is, for a lot of the people I talk to, a lot of their fandom kind of drifts back to going back to Coffee with Kenobi. I love that because, you know, that's where we started. You know, that's where I met a lot of the people I know now are because of that show and being involved in that show. And it's how I met David, was covering Star Wars weekends for Coffee with Kenobi. So I love how that it's kind of like the Godfather.
And wasn't also, by the way, you did when Orlando, they were doing the weekends when the mm-hmm. Rebels was coming out.
Yeah. Star Wars weekends. That was Star Wars weekends at Hollywood Studios in Disney. And I ended up, I actually volunteered because I was going to be going, and they ended up making me just their Star Wars Weekends correspondent for the last 2-3 years. We had Star Wars Weekends, and it was, oh my God, I loved it. It was an amazing time period. That's how I met David, was literally because of the podcast. We were in line at waiting for autograph tickets.
I was going to ask, because like I said, when I listen to reactions and when people listen to you, it really sounds like you've guys been friends forever. And, you know, a lot of times I think the longer you do this, sometimes you don't refer back to the stories because you're like, well, you know, we've talked about it before, right? But I'm like, you know, that's the thing that when it goes back to all our fandoms, right? And it's just these relationships that we continue not only to make, but also to kind of embrace and hold on to, that just make this so much fun.
Yeah. Absolutely. I know I have, you got me scratch my head, 'cause now I want to go back through the archives of the recordings and try to find the Star Wars Weekend interview I did with David and his kids.
That was pretty wild. Yeah. You know, too, Greg, just to kind of give you some background, like on Star Wars Weekends, you would have to go, like, you know, some people would stay overnight out in line outside of Hollywood studios, overnight. Yeah. And so a lot of times, like, I would get down there, Aaron's in Lakeland, I'm in Ocala, get down there at 3-4 in the morning. And I remember, you know, there'd be what, Aaron, probably a line. Here's a line for Jeremy Bullock. Here's a line for Warwick Davis. Here's a line for Ashley Eckstein to get their autographs. And so you get in those lines early in the morning. It's dark, and you just, there's all these Star Wars fans there. And I remember getting on Twitter. I think that's how it was. And
yeah.
And Aaron and I kind of was trying to kind of piece it together, right, Greg? And then I said, wait, are you in line here? And Aaron's like, yes, I am. And so I kind of look around, and I see him looking around. And then that's how we met, you know, probably what, 3-4 in the morning outside, yep, Disney's Hollywood Studios for Star Wars Weekends. And just like you said, Greg, we just, you know, all the fans out there were great. And just by, you know, getting to meet Aaron and then just kind of connect with him. And then just like you said, before we started recording, started doing a few of the episodes with him after he took over Rebels Reactions. And then it just really blossomed from there. And Aaron and I have just really vibed on, you know, family first and recording when we can, and just having fun with it. But I love that you can hear that, because we really do. I love recording with him. I, you know, like you said, Aaron and I would talk about Star Wars if zero people were listening.
Yeah.
No, we just,
and we do.
We do. We do.
So, the mic's not even turned on and we're talking.
That's right. Well, and I think, you know, when you're doing that, then it doesn't seem like, you know, because when you're starting this, right, you feel like, am I going to do this till I die? And, you know, you're trying to figure out, you know, I think we could do this 10, 12, 15 years and still try to figure out how the best way to do it, because there isn't a book written. There's only the people that's gone before us. But I think as long as you keep it in that perspective, what we end up doing is we follow you two and get Star Wars on the side. Because after a while, and I think once you've kind of gotten an audience member, once they kind of get to know you a little bit, then it's something where, you know, regardless of, like, you know, like some things, you know, like, hey, whether it's something medical or, hey, we did this or we don't hire us, or even if you don't talk, you're like, hey, what's going on with them? And even if it's sort of like someone that may never talk to you, may never reach out, but they are interested after a while of, like, hey, what's going on with Aaron? What's going on with David? And that's the kind of funny part. And the longer you do this, the deeper that relationship gets. And, you know, that's why I think it's good to, you know, it's really good to treasure those moments, and it's kind of fun to be able to draw that line between the two of you back to, you know, sitting in line and you going, hey, let's do this. And then because I think it just makes it that more genuine, because there's lots of people who are doing this, and there'll be people that start podcast and end podcast during our run. But it's just fun to catch up, whether I catch every episode or not. It, you know, when you see that thing drop in the feed, you go, okay, it's all right. Things are going, you know, the things have worked out and they're back together again. And you just want to check in. Okay, good. You guys are okay.
Very good. Very good. Well said. Well said. Well said. So, talking about your fandom, continuing down that journey, you know, Star Wars and just fandoms in general, not necessarily Star Wars, but though we focus on Star Wars, but fandoms actually can make a big impact on people. You know, for us, you know,
yes,
for us, David and I, our Star Wars has been made a huge impact on us, our friendship and everything. And, but for you, what has fandom's biggest impact been on you and your life?
It has to kind of go back to what we were saying, and I was thinking of this as I was, you know, when I was listening to some of these questions before, and I would pause the podcast, like, all right, I don't want to be tainted by whatever answer, you know, the next person's going to say. But I think it did come back to, I think, in starting the Instagram page back in 2019, the podcast a few months later into 2019, I think starting that has had the biggest impact on me, because I did not have favorable comments to say on the prequels after they were out. I enjoyed them. But I think once you start getting into this fandom, and you can really go down some crazy rat holes, but I think once you see the different age groups and the people that grew up with the prequels, as opposed to those of us who grew up with the original trilogy, or those who grew up with Clone Wars, different aspects and how much that means to them, the fandom has had an impact, because it really has had me do a lot of 180s on why I particularly like or dislike, or, you know, going back and appreciating these, because it's all Star Wars at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And I can take Star Wars as the day as long. I think that's one of the things I was blessed that I have, is, you know, just like my mom, I'm like, man, just bring it. Let's just take it. But I do think that if you allow it in and you go, I love this, I love the Phantom Menace because I have people out there, you know, the Ben Abbasadas, the Fred Abbasanos that just love the prequels. Mm-hmm. Greg Cass, who loves Obi-Wan Kenobi. Some of these, you know, some of these folks who just really latch onto this stuff. The Full of Sith folks, you know, Brian and, you know, the guy from Star Wars. These guys, Star Wars Report, who grew up with the prequels, they go, you know what, that's their Star Wars to them. And I love the fact that they love it. You know, I love the fact that you love Chopper. And I know that. And it's one of those things, like, it becomes like a joke, like, all right, hey, you know, something Chopper. But I love when people love something, and I love knowing it. Because that just means that something brings someone else joy, especially in everything that goes. And I think the longer we all get, the crazier the world gets, just like anything else, as we get older and everything else goes, ugh. I just love when something makes someone happy. And that, if you go into it with that aspect, then it just makes me happy. It's like, oh, someone likes that particular character. They collect that particular card, or they collect those particular autographs, or they just like that particular movie. That's what, and the longer I get to know, then I go, oh, for example, you know, in knowing, George over at Meanwhile at the Podcast, you know, he's in Northern Virginia, but he's a Mets fan because he grew up in New York. And I sent him some Mets cards because I was pulling some, and I'm like, oh, you like the Mets. Let me send this to you, because they don't mean anything much to me. But I know even if you're not following baseball, you like that little tie. Or like we've talked about, like anytime I see something Chopper, I gotta tag Aaron because I know he loves Chopper. And that makes me happy, because that way I, you know, like I said, I think those are the things that I just, that really make it. And the longer I do this, the more happy I get when I find out what people like. And I go, look, you know, if you're honestly happy about it and you're not just like dogging something else, you go, hey, look, or even if you just like, look, this is my bag and I like clones, or I like, you know, or I like Clone Wars, then it's cool, because that means that there's a little more to it. It's almost like when you're playing fantasy baseball and you have a player in that game. I'm not watching the Cardinals and Brewers, but I have a player in there. So there's a little skin in the game for me. And I think if there is something in a particular genre of Star Wars that somebody likes, they go, oh, well, they're going to like that because they like that. And that's what makes it fun for me, because it takes me out of myself for a moment. It doesn't make me so, you know, like, well, it's not about me. Who cares, right? No. The more you're into this fandom, the more you realize that people are just enjoying this. Let people enjoy it, and it's fun.
Well, and before I ask the next question, you know, I just wanted to jump in there because you know, when you mention that, Greg, you know, you see anything with Chopper, you know, I think about Aaron as well, like you do. And, you know, I just was going to verbalize it, just how, you know, as a psychologist, seeing that in you, like the world's always, like you just said, like a lot of the world wants to just criticize things. And when you hear about someone loving something, you support that. And you'd gotten into contact with me, and, or I think I got into contact with you, or I'm trying to remember, but you were just so helpful with Empire Strikes Back cards from back in the 1980s. And, you know, just, I want listeners to know that just the kindness, the, support. And then I start thinking about the last couple of questions that Aaron and I've asked, like, what was it about Star Wars that appealed to you as a fan, or what has been fandom's biggest impact on you? And as we were mentioning, making friendships like this, like with Aaron, with mm-hmm. you, I mean, you want to talk about just some of the biggest impact on me is having both of you as friends. And I'm just so thankful for that. And so I just wanted our listeners to hear that. And then I wanted to jump into the next one. I'm excited about asking you this, buddy. Yeah. So considering all the stuff that we've seen, do you have a favorite Star Wars moment or experience?
I was thinking of that in going over the questions, and you could always go back to the first time you saw Star Wars, like I was saying, at the drive-through. I remember sitting next to my sister watching Empire Strikes Back in the theater, and of course when, you know, Darth Vader says, you know, I am your father, I didn't believe him for a minute. Of course, did you watch the first movie? This can't happen. But I remember the shock of that. I also remember, you know, when I was on the other side of the globe, I lived overseas for the 90s. And I remember when The Phantom Menace came out, and it was a very small theater on a very small island, and it was a private event, and we had quite a few in us by the time Phantom Menace came on. But I remember seeing that opening crawl. We won't get into that story. Off the mic, we'll talk about that story. But seeing that crawl and going, you know, this is after, of course, we'd seen the special edition, so we'd seen it all again. I'd seen the original in the theaters. I'd seen these, but not knowing what was going to happen. And I remember that crawl, as much as you could say, well, it's about a trade dispute, we didn't know what was going to happen. That first, you know, setup in Phantom Menace is amazing. I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen, and this is amazing. But, you know, you could say that. I was saying, as far as Star Wars, it's like, I was just thinking about Rogue One and how much I love Rogue One, because it was a Star Wars movie that was made for the adult that had grown up watching Star Wars, and so many things. And just thinking of Chirrut Imwe, which is going to take out one of the questions, because that's one of my favorite characters. But I had to watch that scene again earlier tonight, about him going out to, you know, like when he goes and, you know, I'm one with the Force and the Force is with me. And then at the end, you know, when he has that embrace with Maze Balbus, and he goes, you know, look for the Force and you will always find me. And you go, tell me a better moment in Star Wars besides Kanan's death. That just, you know, which, wow. By the way, we could have an entire discussion about Rebels as far as that's concerned. One of these days we should. But I'm like, when you're talking about two of just these, like, oh, those are that, you know, those two, it's really hard to pick between the two. As far as within the last, you know, in recent memory, that's not, you know, tied to a very nostalgic moment. But I'm like, for those two, oh, chef's kiss, as far as that's concerned.
You got me tearing up talking about Kanan's death, man.
Oh,
it's a gut punch every time. It's one of those experiences that no matter how many times you've watched that episode, it gets you every time. You know what's coming, but every time it's going to get you.
For so many shows that fail to stick the landing at the end of the series, can we just say that Rebels did it right? Absolutely. We just say that? And
absolutely,
you are, you know, with two, and then you're going, there's a couple episodes to go. How are we going to pick up the pieces? And you follow Hera, and Hera's touch with Chopper, and you just go, You know, I'm going to need a minute, guys. I'm going to take a minute and pull myself together. But I think that's something when you see as many shows as we are going to have going down the line, whether it's The Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett, all that, you know, back at a time when there was no Disney Plus, they were just putting out stuff and they're going, hey, look, you know, Clone Wars had already truncated its ending. So really, if you think about it, Rebels had a beginning, middle, and end.
Yes.
Whereas nobody did before. They did it right. And, you know, it's amazing how I think all these series, you really have to compare up to Rebels as far as the steps they took, you know, the leaps they took as far as, like, when you're talking about, you know, World Between Worlds and then, you know, the father, the brother and the sister and all that kind of stuff and all that. And you're just going, wow. And then I think we are getting payoffs for years to come that are based off of what the groundwork that Rebels put down. I'm preaching the choir, basically.
No, absolutely. And I'm going to say this, even though it's probably not I'll get a ton of feedback on this when the show goes live, but you know, Clone Wars set the groundwork for animated shows. Rebels set the standard for Star Wars shows.
Agreed.
It set the standard in exploring the myth, expanding the myth, and telling a fully encapsulated story around characters nobody had ever heard of. And that's one reason I loved that show so much.
And I'll say this, I've sat down and started watching it again to kind of follow along with Dan, you know, on Monday nights as top five. And I'm watching these episodes, and you know, when they first came out, you know, there's something about watching things a second and third time. And just like you said, Greg, that beginning, middle, end, it wasn't truncated. And they just they had the opportunity to tell the full story. And wow, lo and behold, how incredible. And like you said, I remember back in recording that episode with Aaron when Chopper's little hand comes up and touches Hera's. And Aaron and I are just like destroyed. I'm trying not to cry as we're recording. It just was incredible. But, it is so well done. But going back through and watching it here now, just recently, I hadn't, you know, watched it since a lot of when Aaron and I covered it. But I'm with both of you. It's aging well. And I like what you said, Greg, that we're getting payoffs now from this show.
We're getting the payoffs, and we will continue to get the payoffs because there's just so much. There was so much encapsulated in those four seasons that they opened the door for. That's just we'll see it connected for years to come. So,
you know, and for me, like I went to the Clone Wars movie in 2006 or whatever. Took my kid there, enjoyed it. Tried to watch the Clone Wars and I just really couldn't get into it. So for me, when Ahsoka shows up in Rebels, I mean, that's really my full introduction to Ahsoka. And now you're seeing, you know, a live action Ahsoka that starts in The Mandalorian, and you're seeing it in the Book of Boba Fett. And you know, when she says Grand Admiral Thrawn, and you're just like, all right, pick me up off the floor. And then you just see of what to come. And it's all what we have now is what we would have had back in the day of that anticipation of like, could blah, blah, blah happen? Could I see blah, blah, blah? And that's what we have to really enjoy now. It's going to come and it's going to be something that eventually it'll be on Disney Plus and you can stream it when you want to, and we'll have talked it to death. But that lead up, I think your audience and Star Wars fans should really just embrace the unknown of what's going to happen, because pretty soon Kenobi's going to come on and we know what's going to happen, but there's going to be some things. Oh man, I can't, you know, all we have now is just the anticipation of what we don't know yet.
Yeah.
And whereas before you'd have just years between things and you go create some novels and fanfic and all that. I mean, all we have left is between seasons because all this stuff is just hitting us at a clip. know, I'd love to have David to take apart, this phenomenon as far as, what happens when you get stuff now just as a spigot that's just left on. So I would say to any younger audience out there, just enjoy not knowing, because once it's known, it's all right.
Yeah, that's right. Well said. Which kind of runs right into our next question here. What we just discussed is how have you seen fandom change throughout the years? We've kind of talked about it, touched on it a little bit already, mm-hmm. but how have you seen it change through the years from your perspective?
I think getting to know it, it's interesting because, fandom for a long time was all my age. And then all of a sudden it became, it splintered at the prequels and at the Clone Wars and at the Disney era and the sequel trilogy and the Disney Plus. And I think you see a much more vocal fandom, many ways not good, because I think that along with, the interactions that we have, if you think about fan boards back in, in the 90s after the internet era and all that, everybody was excited to get to find a community that was outside of a magazine, when before you had to, you followed magazines to find news and read other things. And then you found message boards, and then and then later on, as the internet grew, you found trolls. Now you find folks that are just posting things. And so I think what a lot of people are finding is a fandom that you can get the experience that you want. But I do think, much like with news and anything else, I think you have to give yourself, give yourself a good full picture, mm-hmm. and be careful not to indulge the dark side of it, because it'll tell you exactly what you want to hear. And I just don't really feel that there is time. I don't have time for the quick hits and the folks who try to make they're living in their bones off of, grinding on things that they can't change, we can't change. And I just don't, there's so much, and I hate to feel like we're whitewashing it, right? There's always it's not always, we always make it feel like it's blue skies and sunny days, and it's always good in the fandom, and there's never anything wrong. And I'm like, that's not necessarily the case, but we go back to Dan and say that, if you can discuss this critically, but have a point to go, look, I thought about this. This is something that I wasn't exactly thrilled about because X, Y, and Z, or let's talk over this wire, A, B, and C, X, Y, and Z. Never good at indexing. Yeah. then I think that's what I want, and I think that's what we need. We give yourself a good diet, whether it's food and whether it's fandom, because if you get swept up into it, I've seen plenty of accounts that just sit there and just deride things, and I'm like, there's no joy in your life, and I don't really want to be a part of it. I'm sure you're very good to your family and your kids or your thing, and you're a good person, but I don't understand why you have this edge to you and you feel the need. I don't know what it fills in you, but I can't imagine it's good for you. I'm getting off of topic, but that's looking at that.
And you said it, Greg, like with fandom, I think back to, like you said, when we were kids, and just the cards, that my original memories are just collecting the blue border, right? The original Star Wars cards. And there was no,
I don't have to bring this out because you guys have done a great job of putting stuff out on the Tuesdays, and I get no end of pleasure of seeing it. But yes, I brought props.
He's showing us the blues and the red greens and, and that's what I remember. There was no boards. There were no Twitter sites or Instagram. You couldn't, your buddies, what most of the podcasts, when you listen to them, a lot of these OG people were like, we just remember talking on the playground about it. But it wasn't the negativity. And like you said, I'm not sure what it fills in their life. You got one? You have one there? You pulled one out.
The only negative thing I would say about this 1977 card is the wax stain on the back. And I'm like, yeah, I'll take that. I'll take the wax stain.
That's the most negativity you'll get from Greg.
I got a gum stain on my card. Darn.
He's got Yeah, he's flipping through, and we're Aaron and I can see the reds, blues, yellows, and
oh my gosh,
that's yeah. I was fortunate enough to collect all that. I have every single one of those original ones, and you do too now, right, buddy? You got them all there.
Yes, it. I had, you know, it's amazing in a town I grew up in that had maybe 1,200 people and one stoplight. And one pharmacy that had a magazine rack and you know, like a checkout counter, they had candies and so forth, that they had trading cards. And I remember getting a little bit of the blues, reds, and what's interesting now is I can't really remember what came first. Did I see the movie first and I collected the cards, or vice versa? But I do remember that the Yellow Series 3, I had more of than anything else. So by at that time, so, you know, like the cards come out in June of 77. So obviously about a month or so after the film debuts. And they had five series that went from June to into 1978. You know, at that point, Topps had a little bit of foray. You know, they'd done King Kong and, you know, they'd been doing entertainment for a while. Mm-hmm. But they really had a hit on their hands with Star Wars and several series later. And then you can see that into the successive releases into the late 70s and early 80s with things like Close Encounters with Moonraker, of all things, Battlestar Galactica, all, you know, the Black Hole and all that, that, you know, so at some point, you know, like I had a bunch of the Yellow Series 3. So this is logically, it's probably late 77. And, you know, it starts my foray into baseball cards as well. But it's like with anything back in the time, like a comic book rack, right? They might get some in, and if you didn't get it that month, you didn't get it. So it's like, so I had holes, and then in the mid 80s, when cards really started catching fire, there were some card shops that opens, and I was able to fill a bunch of my collection, but still I had holes. And it wasn't really until I got back in 2015 where I was like, hey, I have an eBay account. Why don't I just go fill these? And thank God, because now it's be much more expensive to do so. But and then a friend of mine actually got me for my birthday a number of years ago, got me filled out the rest of my Orange Series 5 cards. And I'm very happy because you don't find them in the way that you do now. But yeah, that's, you know, and I think when it goes back to, and it becomes nice because I think if anybody, as an aside, if anybody is halfway interested in this and you go, they've been making cards, you know, for a very long time, there's lots of Star Wars cards. They release them every year, it seems. I think the vintage ones, or the ones that when you got into the fandom, like if you go to the prequel era and you get the widescreen, you know, Phantom Menace or Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, those are the ones I think that'll make you the happiest, because those will be tied back to direct memories of you seeing that film in the theater, or you seeing it, you know, for the first time. And then go from there. You don't have to collect anything else. But I think if someone was looking for a starting point, go back to the ones that make you the happiest, or the ones you have it tied to. And I find myself going back to vintage a lot, and you know, I get nicer binders and things like that. And now I keep looking for other countries, international versions that happen, whether it's the Yamakatsu Japanese or the Opichi Canadian. You know, if you can find it, the Mexican ones, real hard. The Argentina ones, super hard. You know, there's ones from the UK, they're numbered different. And if you're a collector, anything that has a different number, if it's the same card, it's different. I got to collect it. That's just what happens in my head. Those I think I find and I go back to time and time again. And it's nice because, you know, I collect so many now, I have to archive some. But these ones stay in the binder. They get the best treatment, as it were. I guess I could slab them if I wanted to, but that would preclude me being able to, you know, have them.
Yeah.
Stickers.
Look at that. Beautiful. Hey, and before I ask the next question, you know, I was going to ask you a question. Our listeners, I'm looking right behind the binder. You have the three tops. Yes. Was there three of them or two of them? Five. Oh my gosh. So
I knew you were going to ask this question, so I brought the books out.
Well, I've looked at those, tried to decide whether or not they're beautiful. These tops, they got the wax sleeves on the outside. Can you talk a little bit about this? Oh, my God, just beautiful.
Yes.
Beautiful. Are they worth it? Do you recommend people get them?
Abrams is not paying me enough to pimp these books. And I've been saying this since day one on the podcast. Abrams, reach out. Call me. Here's you know, the good and bad of it is that if you don't want to fool with the cards, but you enjoyed them, maybe you picked them up. There is one for the three original sets of series. So they have the, you know, the original 77 ones, you know, the original Topps Trading Card Series Volume 1. We'll go through all five sets, including the stickers, which is really nice because you'll see front and back, you'll see the card. Some of the, now the one thing is that Gary Gerani, who worked for Topps, and he's on my hit list of interviews, will give you a nice little overview because he worked at Topps and he was, you know, he was part of getting the original like card sets together, worked there at Topps through the early 90s. So you'll find out a little bit more about it, but what you'll do is you'll see, you know, each of the cards, each of the stickers. Sometimes there's a little liner note that'll kind of tell you like things that happen good, things that you're like, hey, we just happen to have this one. So it's really nice. And what I like about it is especially if you have some cards and you have it in a binder, you can pull down the book and you can kind of, flip through it, because like today, for example, this is a great example. So, we're looking at the Celebration autograph list and there are a couple of people who were Ewoks in Return of the Jedi. And so I'm thinking like, well, they're in the more affordable range of autographs. Did they show up on a Return of the Jedi card? So I go to my Return of the Jedi book. Because sometimes it's a little easier. I could go to the volume and flip through, but I just want to kind of flip through real fast. And I kind of found, and on this case, well, that's Empire Strikes Back. That ain't going to tell me much. Let me go to the actual Return of the Jedi book. And I had this bookmarked. So a couple of these folks show up on card 103. Nice. And I'm like, boy, wouldn't that be fun if I was going to go to Celebration to get that card signed because I think two of them are going to be on this card. They're both Ewoks that don't have a ton of, card exposure like, Chief Chirpa or, Lugray or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So that's they become a nice reference set. Now, because I haven't said this yet, and I say this every time I talk about these cards, right? Five sets for Series 1, U.S., asterisk. Three for Empire Strikes Back, two for Return of the Jedi. So there are three books. Right. If you do nothing else, get the first one. You'll like it. You won't regret it. It's got to be like $15 on Amazon. Come on. But I also like the fact that, it gives you kind of a waxy cover. And then in there, there's actually a couple of cards they try to do as, examples of. This is also where I found out what the order form was for the original set, which I actually found at a convention. Like this right here, which is I'm leaning away from the mic. This is an order form, which I actually found at a convention last year. This is what a distributor or a buyer would have had to use. And I have one. So because of that. But there are two other books, I'll say the two main ones. There is one for the mid-90s widescreen. Oh. It's not all the series, but it does give you an idea of the widescreens because they went back in 95 to redo the trilogy, and you can see the gorgeous widescreen cards there, plus a lot of that. And then there is one, I'll do this that way I can be on, I'm like trying to show you. So here's one on Star Wars Galaxy, which in 1993, it had been 10 years since the last release. They start doing these art cards, and there are now maybe nine sets. The first three are 93, 94, 95, and this is in the card heyday. This is where you're finding, basketball and baseball. Everybody's making millions of cards, but these are great books to have if you're thinking about going after some cards or just want to kind of know a little more about it. And right. It's really great. I talk about a sixth one because there is actually one that Abrams did of the stickers. And it's a larger one. It has just replicas of all the stickers in a lot of these sets. And they're pretty cool. And it just feels like, hey, at this point, what haven't I bought from Abrams? I might as well get it. but Abrams have also done ones, I think, for Planet of the Apes and one or two other card sets. So they're, like I said, they're nice reference books. They're not like, you know, most of them are just pictures. I wish all the cards had liner notes. I could use every one, but there's enough on there that even if you're interested in, it's nice. You're like, I don't really feel like chasing the cards now. They could be super expensive, but I do remember collecting them, and it's kind of fun to go back through them. They'll show you what the puzzles looked like as well. So I always kind of refer back to them because a lot of times I, you know, like I said, that's my bag, right? I'm supposed to know this stuff.
No, that's really cool. I'm glad you explained those. Those are just, wow, that is neat stuff. That's great. Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you the next question because I've got like 50 more cards that I'm not gonna hit you with. So the one that Aaron and I have next is the Star Wars saga has themes that run through all these stories, themes like redemption, hope, et cetera. But what theme from the saga has maybe had the biggest impact for you?
Mm. It's tough. And I remember this, you stump a lot of people with this question. I like the David and Goliath aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you start off in A New Hope with, you know, the rebellion against this mammoth empire, and it doesn't phase Princess Leia a bit. She's just like, I got captured. I don't care. I really like that. I do like, you know, it's interesting. And I did kind of roll back into this, not to make it heavy religious, but I do like the faith. I go back to Cheer at Imwe of just, once again, going out to there. And, you know, he was just adamant. And Baze had kind of, you know, had kind of fallen off the wagon a bit and got back. And at the end, he's just like, yeah, okay, Force is with me. I'm one with the Force. And he's just like, as he's pumping bolts into stormtroopers. And I really like that. Or if you know, it's funny because in some cases as a kid, after getting the VHS, I'd fast forward through all the garbage that Yoda was saying in the Return of the Jedi, like whatever. Now you go back and listen to Yoda a lot, especially in Empire, you know, when he's like, luminous beings were not, you know, he's like talking about, like, you know, the trees, the rock, and all this and the Force, and you listen to Kenobi and A New Hope talk about it, and you go, wow, man, something that's bigger than you, something that is just out there. I can't really, you know, you may not understand it. It's certainly not luck. I was sitting there thinking the other day, I think a line that doesn't get a lot of play, you know, a lot of people like doing it like, you know, kid, I've been from one side of this galaxy to the other, blah, blah, blah. It's all luck. And Kenobi kind of goes, in my business, there's no such thing as luck. And I don't think that line gets enough play these days because I'm just like, that's a snappy comeback, Ben. You've had a lot of time in the desert to think about that. But I do think that, you know, like I said, this little guy versus big guy, the hope, I think a little bit of faith thrown in there for good measure, but just, you know, there's just so much stuff that's bigger. And I, you know, in going back to Rogue One about where everybody has a role to play and, you know, none of those folks made it out of there. But you know, how, even if you said nothing else, like how about the angst that Saw Gerrera when he sees that big wave come and just rips that ventilator off and goes, bring it. You know, all right, I'm done. And it just that defiance, I think you have to like it. You know, you're going up, you know, 30 ships against a Death Star. You know, those guys are nuts, but we're going to do it because you're like, you know, whatever. Look at the size of that thing. He's like, shut up. So those are the kind of things I kind of like, that little bit of defiance, that little bit of, you know, have a little bit of defiance, a little bit of faith, and a little bit of like, you know what, we're just going to see what happens. And sometimes it pays off, and you got to love it.
Wow. Well said, buddy. Well said.
Now I do want to talk about your cards. Yeah, we've talked a little bit about your cards.
Still have enough space on your hard drive? Are you ready for this? I can.
Oh, we got it. Don't worry about it.
All right.
I do want to talk about your cards because you have, like I said at the beginning of the show, and it's been well proven through the discussion so far, you are knowledgeable and a giant when it comes to trading cards. So there's a, you have a lot, and we've discussed it and off the air through the years since we started talking, and it really has gotten me back into card collecting as well, to my wife's dismay. But you know, it's
I'm playing a long game, Aaron.
Yes, yeah, you're playing a long game here. So you go beyond just the Star Wars. Do you collect beyond just the Star Wars cards? Or?
Yes, and I would say that baseball goes hand in hand through the years, whether it's a little or a lot, because I think it was Star Wars that probably got me to open packs, and then baseball in between, just because, A, they were 15, 20 cents a pack, and that's what a kid could afford. I did have at the time in the late 80s, I did have everything from the Kiss cards to, I remember Close Encounters because I remember putting a lot of stickers on my chest of drawers to the dismay of my mom. having Battlestar Galactica, how about those Wonder Bread cards?
Yes.
For both Star Wars, and I'd forgotten about the Battlestar Galactica and even that the fact that they had Close Encounters Wonder Bread cards. How about the Hostess baseball cards that came, you know, three on the bottom? Or stuff that came inside, you know, a box of cereal and whatnot. But I think now when I go back to it, it's really hard because, you know, when I had one binder in 2015 when I started back in, and of course a bunch of like I had a bunch of the Batman. I still have a bunch of the Batman, the movie. And yeah, I had some hockey and a bunch of 92 baseball. Unfortunately, I got all in on that set. I just can't get rid of them. But I remember recently going back, I did a trade with a friend of mine, Mike Summer from the Wax Pack Hero podcast. And he was trying to fill out one of his sets, and we were trying to figure out a trade because I'm like, you really should try to trade. And I'm like, what do you got as far as like late 70s non-sport? And he sent over a full set of Jaws 2, Close Encounters, Moonraker, full set of Battlestar Galactica. We it was one of those where I'm like, who got the better of the trade? I think it was equal, because he got to fill a little bit of his sets. But I'm like, going back and seeing some of this and, you know, revisiting some of these, it's really great. And the trick, unfortunately, is that due to the amount of cards I have now, it's really hard for me to find. I keep having to archive and try to find space for it because there are so many cards that are coming out and you really can't get them all. But sometimes you go back to what you love. And then, you know, what I enjoy now going back first, like in the 90s for the sets I didn't have and some of the vintage stuff, is you can see how the designs and how things shared between card sets. You know, we think of the vintage stickers of Star Wars, where they have that halo around them.
Yep.
Well, that was what Star Trek, they did for Star Trek in the 76 set that didn't sell well. One of the reasons why they tops turned down Star Wars when they first were approached is because Star Trek in 76 didn't sell well. But you can see it carry through that in this one, in Battlestar Galactica. You know, they share those designs. If you think about that classic... If I go back to, you're going to be really sorry you asked. all right. So, for example, this, you know, the famous the movie reel that goes across the backs of some of those vintage Star Wars. Well, that you find that in the King Kong set of 76 where they did movie facts. You see, if you look at Battlestar Galactica, they're sharing, if you look at the backs of those, you're like, well, that's a Star Wars background. That's just, instead of a X-Wing, it's a Colonial Viper. So it's, now you start seeing, you know, Moonraker has 100 cards. Star Wars didn't have they had 66 cards per set. Who's making a 100 card Moonraker set? Moonraker. How did they get 100 cards out of Moonraker? But also in that, there were cards that showed you like, this is what the puzzle is going to look like for Moonraker. Well, that's exactly what they did in Empire and Return of the Jedi, right? So you're seeing these shared, you know, it's like, it's probably one or two folks at Tops that are working, you know, 14-hour days trying to crank this stuff out going, I need some help. So they're just sharing designs across, but the non-sports of that start to give you an idea. And I'm sure if I got, you know, the Welcome Back card or Three's Company and Mork and Mindy had card sets, Greece had card sets. You know, you can see these designs carry across, and I think it gives you a better picture of that. But now it's fun to go back and look at it to see, like, wow, this is what they were, this is what they're trying to think. You know, as we get older from it, and now they're, you know, 40 or 50 years, you're getting close to, you know, eventually be 50 years past this. And the folks that are creating these things are going to be, unfortunately, like a lot of the actors and so forth, you're trying to piece this together. And as a collector, you're like, after a while, you can look at these things and what you're looking for is what's different. What do I don't know yet? And how does this tie into everything else? And I think once you see some of the other card sets, I start to get a bigger picture. But it's just hard for me to consistently collect because, for example, whereas a typical Star Wars set nowadays might have 100 cards. Let's talk about baseball, Major League Baseball, Series 1, 2. They could have, you know, 900 cards for just their flagship set, yeah. Let alone Allen and Ginter, you know, all these other sets they release throughout the year that, you know, there are people that just collect a certain, you know, version of that every year, or, you know, they just collect flagship. So after a while, this stuff takes up so much space. That's why I don't read comics. I don't collect comics anymore because I just don't have room. Because I thought, well, I'll make more from cards. Now I'm running. So you have to kind of really, you know, it's very hard to really go too far out because I'd really love to collect the Game of Thrones cards or the Lord of the Rings cards. As I know, you know, Rittenhouse and Upper Deck and all these other companies are making great stuff. And you go past Target, right? You go look at those blaster boxes going, well, that looks kind of nice. I like to open some packs, but you go, where am I going to put it? I can't put it anywhere. And that's why George over at Meanwhile at the Podcast is nice enough to take some of those sports cards off because I don't have room for them and I don't follow the Mets. So here, please take my Mets. Please take my Mets cards. You know.
Very good. Very good. So and that's one thing I wanted to talk to you about and ask you about too while we had you on. Is you mentioned, you know, not having space, but I wanted to talk about the availability of collector's cards. Cause you know, I remember back when I was, back when we were younger, you know, you'd walk into a store, you'd have you'd have boxes just sitting there opened up, just grab a pack, $1-$2 if that. And, it was just very easy to collect. But nowadays, you know, you can't find cards anywhere. I don't know about where it is where y'all are, but in my neck of the woods, you know, every store I go to, is they just don't have the packs for sale. Then a lot of them don't even have the blister boxes. And mm-hmm. if they do, there's only like one or two total that they have. So it's the difficulty of securing this has been, these have been rough. I've had to order offline lately. Have you found it more difficult to try to collect these cards now? And how are you going about getting that done?
Most certainly. And it's interesting, even from the point of, you know, and starting back in 2015, when we had The Force Awakens that came in December of that year. And so one of the first sets that drew me back in, although Rebels had sets that you could even find packs and, like, you know, jumbo packs at Toys R Us, moment of silence, please, in 2014, the journey to The Force Awakens was the set that drew me back into collecting. I'd say has a huge impact because you could find them in different spaces within Target, the halcyon days of collecting. But, you know, you could find them as, you know, packs of X amount of cards as opposed to the blaster boxes and then the individual packs. And for a long time before I got into the, you know, as deeper into the hobby, that's how I collected. I would, you know, we're doing on a Target run or a Walmart run. You'd grab a handful of packs from the retail boxes that they would be put out by Tops, and you would end up with a ton of cards and a ton of dupes. And you, you know, even if you're getting into like, all right, I got to get binders. And now I've got like five copies of this particular card. And then you would go and like, well, all right, if a hobby box, and I'll take an aside for a second, if your viewers can come with me. So when Tops would release a set, they would have hobby boxes that would be released through, you know, card stores or online distributors like, you know, Blowout, David Adams, Steel City, whatnot. You'd have those boxes that would be it would kind of look like a retail box, but it would have better odds on far as things like autographs or relics or particular inserts, which at the time when I got back in, I had no clue. You know, if it was the medallions or what, you know, like the retail blaster boxes that would have like, you know, 10 packs or whatnot, they would have a special card in there, like a medallion or a patch. And, you know, it's pretty cool, except I can't put it in a binder. So after a while you get stacked those. So, you know, the retail would just kind of be for like that grab and go. The hobby box would be like, all right, you know, you go from spending a couple, $3 for a pack to now you're spending about 70 or 80 bucks for a box. And then that's your first leap of when you're getting back into collecting, going, wow, do I really want to spend that much money? Oh, they have autographs now? Oh, crap. What are these sketch cards? What is this all about? Boy, that changed my life. So those, you know, and then it became when I got back in, before I started doing the Instagram page, and I'd been wanting to do some kind of reviews for a while, but you got in a habit of like, wow, if I get the hobby box, then I don't have to buy so many packs and I don't get so many dupes. And okay. And then that became a nice cycle until, well, COVID. And then everybody discovered like, well, we're all stuck at home. What do we want to do? Let's get these baseball cards or these cards I've got out. And now we just can't get enough of them. So COVID, I think, had the largest impact to drive up, you know, it was already starting to kind of move up because, you know, we'd had a lot of folks in football and baseball that were, you know, a lot of nice young talent that was getting in, and they were driving up the prices of those cards and the interest in those cards. And then COVID hit, well, everything went up. And as sports goes, the non-sport category goes. So now everybody's pulling, you know, there's fights in parking lots over blaster boxes of cards, and the shelves are bare. And I would have to say I give it up to Walmart and Target for putting up with this nonsense, so much so to the fact where Target actually said, you know what, screw it. We're not selling X, Y, and Z for a while. And even if what do we have, you know, and Pokemon also celebrating 25 years of, you know, of their anniversary. So you can't find them anymore. Sorry, kids. All the 40 and 50 year olds are wanting them for, I don't know what they want them for. to sell, right? Because they can take a blaster box. They arrive first thing in the morning on a Friday because they find out when people are, the distributors are coming, and then they sell them for $60. And I guess that's a good way to make a living. Needless to say, your average folk like yourselves or someone going, hey, cards are kind of cool, I'd like to try it out. Well, you just took the easiest way to get those off the table. And even if someone was interested, now I go, yeah, screw it. I think what's interesting is that as the pandemic has calmed down a bit, and, you know, prices are still higher, the availability is still not as great, but you are seeing the signs that is starting to come back down, where you are seeing a little bit of this or that. I think it's funny that I would say that Target has probably done the best thing possible in that, look, two packs, okay? You know, like whatever it is, two or three things. We're not going to have any more of this filling up a shopping cart business. And when you get a retail box and, well, you could only get three or four packs, well, that means there's probably going to be on the shelf longer. So that when I go in the other day and, you know, we have Topps Series 1 baseball and Topps opening day and some, you know, OPG hockey and some other upper deck hockey, and you're actually seeing a little bit on the shelves. Now you can have those discussion with yourself going, hey, maybe I want to grab a couple of packs and go. You know, much like when GameStop had the Panini has done like the sticker books for years, right? They did them for World Cup. They do them for baseball, football, basketball, whatnot. And it was nice because during the football season, you could actually find them at GameStop, because at that point, no one was looking at GameStop to have Panini. And so they would get these display boxes, and the sticker packs actually had a trading card inside of them with the stickers. Ha! So I'm like, all of a sudden, like, yes, new product I can get. It's not going nuts. And it was fun to kind of chase them. Even though it wasn't necessarily something I was interested in, it was kind of a fun because I could actually go and get some, as opposed to going there and seeing yet another empty shelf of this. So it's funny because even stuff that I talked about on my podcast two or three years ago, you know, you kind of had to change your tune a little bit and go, all right, if you're interested, one of the things you want to do is that Topps over the last several years has done a lot of online cards and sets. One most famously is the Living Set, started in baseball, moved to Star Wars. They'll be celebrating, now this will come out a little later, but they'll be hitting card number 300. They commissioned artist Chris Penix and later on Carlos Caballero to do these amazing paintings that they turn into cards, and they release them weekly. And the cards are available for a week only. You can order them. And then once once that week is up, they'll print them and ship them out. But what it means is, you know, during that time, you're free to order it. It'll be regular price. You don't have to pay a markup. You can buy one or two cards. And it's great because that way you could passively do it like, this particular week just happened to be, I hate to date this, the Han Solo in Carbonite, which was a great little landscape shot. I think it was Carlos Caballero who was doing it, said actually that it was supposed to be card 300, but they did it for this one. So can't wait for what card 300 is. But I'm like, oh, good, buy it. And then I don't have to worry about it. Topps has done other ones for special occasions. They did for International Women's Day. They did like the most powerful women in a galaxy set. And they would do it for X number of time. I think it was a $20 set, 20 or 24, 12 cards. You just order it. You had X amount of time to do it. You're paying just that price, and then you can just go away, and then you do it. The next one would probably be May the 4th. Sometimes they enlist eBay to sell it. I have no idea why. But they'll be exclusive to eBay. But some of these online ones I found, and they'll do it for like, soccer, baseball. They have Topps now. But it's a little more easier for a passive one to get because maybe it'll be about a theme, or Father's Day is another one they've done in the fact, this is your Father's Day set, where a passive fan could go, you know what? I get the entire set. It's, 10, 20, 30. They'll do them. They did them for the weekly sets for the Book of Boba Fett and the Mandalorian. They'll probably do one for Kenobi. And it's easier to get. You don't have to fight with anybody. You can click it from your phone or your computer. And then you get the cards, couple, 3 weeks later. That's if you choose like the free shipping, it's like 1 or 2 weeks later. And that's it. You get all the cards you'd want to. Now they're including more parallels, which is nice. You can get a numbered parallel card, which means that there are fewer of that particular number that's being ordered. And I think it makes it so much easier. And I think that's kind of fun because, like I said, it's you don't really have to chase too much. It's like I click, I order, I'm done. Yeah. And then I get it, and then I can enjoy the cards. Some of these are nice because, like I said, if you're going to conventions and you happen to see that person, I won't have them sign this card. So I have like a binder just for some of these online ones. During the run-up to the movies, they would do these little more expensive ones where they release like two or three cards a week for this particular set, and it might go for a long time. But once again, it's like buying a couple of cups of coffee at Starbucks, and I don't have to go into and fight with anybody. It's just there, I get it, boom, I'm done. I think that's where I usually tell people, if you are a passive card fan, if you're a Star Wars fan, you're like, you kind of like the cards a little bit, keep an eye on this, on the Topps feed. You can sign up for their emails. You can, of course, follow me. And I've bought most of this stuff. And you can see what I'm usually grousing about. But it's fun and it's easier. And I think eventually down the road, there'll be more Star Wars cards in retail. Because of still the limitations of, and I think, the retail ones weren't having big hits to begin with, although you can get sketch cards and the odd autograph. That'll be when I see them back in these stores as a pack you can pick up as some, like, you're, hey, I'm buying some yogurt and bread, and I'll throw a couple of packs in there. That's when I know things at least are as back to normal as they can. Boy, I've talked for a long time, haven't I?
No, you're fine. You're fine. But no, it answered the question, because that was one of the things I was just curious about, because that's one thing I've been dealing with down here is trying to figure out where to go from there, because it got to the point where I, haven't been finding stuff. So I've actually just been, on eBay, or I actually did a lot on Mercari. Mm-hmm. Mercari app, where people were like, I got this whole set here for $10. All right, yeah, I'll take that whole set.
Right. And that's for new product. You can still find, like I said, if you're going on those sites, if you go on eBay, you can find lots or whole sets of, X set, whether it's, whether it's something that's vintage or 90s, like the vintage ones now have a little more play in them because people are trying to assess value to them. Mm-hmm. The first blue card, because it's Luke's rookie card, and I hate saying it, it goes up, or if you get it slabbed. But if you go back to, let's say, hey, I wanted to pick up the Phantom Menace full set of the Wide Vision, or you want to pick up, you know, Attack of the Clones or Avengers of the Sith, or you want to pick up something. A lot of times after people have broken these boxes or even cases of boxes, the base sets to them don't have value, so they'll usually sell them wholesale. And you can find great deals on full sets. And, you know, it's a good time now. Get your Return of the Jedi sets in now, because next year when they hit their 40th anniversary, you know, you'll probably see an artificial spike in value. I'm trying to collect some myself for giveaways later, and there's nothing I like more than building a set that I've done five times over already. I just can't help myself. But, you know, there was a like 120 cards for $20. I'm like, give me. Because I can find a home for them. Yeah. I think that's a great way to do it. And, you know, there are ways to build this up. And I guess, like I said, it goes back to, you know, start with the sets you love, start with the sets that you're nostalgic about. And then if you find that you kind of like this stuff and you want to, you can join Facebook groups. You can, you know, follow me and listen, and you can look on Tops. You can follow Beckett, you know, go to Beckett.com and see the news. And if some of these are things you're interested in, like we just got news of the Book of Boba Fett set that I think come out in November, which I think is probably, for me, the next set that I think the average fan may really like. And you'll see some first time autographs and whatnot. There'll be releases throughout the year this year, but I think that might be one that's a 100 card set. That might be someone, you know, if you like Book of Boba Fett, or hey, The Mandalorian comes out again, and they'll probably do weekly sets again. You know, you can have some fun and play along with those. Those are some of the fun and most expensive times in my life when I'm buying the weekly sets. But, you know, it's at least a chase that you can do from the comfort of your computer chair.
Very good. Very good. Well, we have been going for a while, so we're going to move into the last series of questions that we have here for you, and wrap this up. 'Cause we know your time is valuable. So our last major question, which is our final question before we go into our speed round questions, which are just, you know, fun. When it comes to the current direction of the Star Wars saga, how do you feel about its current direction?
This was another one. I love this question, because even when I heard it before, it's still something I think that really makes you think. And, you know, we talked before about having those gaps of having that anticipation. And what I would say, I would echo Jason a bit, is that, you know, as much as, you know, Dave Filoni and company don't come to the house and ask me what I feel about things. And so I take, you know, you have to take, in some cases, it is for what it is. But I do enjoy I always enjoy new Star Wars. You know, I think the biggest leap for us was when Rebels finished and Resistance began, because we got something new and we were ready to embrace it, but it was a lot different. Mm-hmm. But I think we took it as like, let's take this on its own merits. And I enjoyed the Resistance run. I enjoyed going to the Resistance panel at Celebration, even though I wasn't originally going to do it, but I caught it and I was able to get in. And then, you know, some of the folks online, Christopher Sean, who does the voice of Kazuda.
Kazuda. Kazuda Ziono.
Ziono. And, you know, in response to fans every now and then, I remember my daughter did a picture of CB-23 and posted after an episode that we watched, and he actually liked the photo. And I was like, man, this guy, the guy who just voiced something I just watched, just liked something my daughter just did. And you're like, man, that is awesome. And so I was ready. I really liked it. One, it made my cosplay, Matt, the radar technician, made the radar technician canon. I mean, what's not to love about that? But yep. I think for what they've done, you know, it's definitely like, if you go back to Clone Wars, and, you know, Rebels, and then you think about a Star Wars movie, you know, they've had to change their course a few times, and you could say, gotcha. You didn't know. Like, well, they're trying to figure it out. But I'm like, I wonder what Lucasfilm would have been able to do, you know, now streaming services, now it's all the rage. The TV is the big gorilla in the room. And, we're going to be getting Star Wars in this capacity. And I'm liking what I'm seeing. I mean, I have quibbles here and there, but I had quibbles about the prequels. I go back and listen. There's a couple of lines in the original trilogy. You go, really? Okay. It doesn't hit right. But I think overall, I'm content that I still get Star Wars at age, 50 plus, we'll just say, and that I get to enjoy it. And I come into it, much like I always go back to my mom and how even when I was listening to music as a kid, and it wasn't certainly music of her generation, but she was open to it and she found something she liked. And when I take my little one to school every day and we listen to current hits radio and there's some stuff going, I don't know if I like that one, but hey, I like that one. And it's something we can both listen to. And I'm going to keep an open mind about it. And so I'm like, hey, look, Disney, if not Disney, someone else would have probably bought Lucasfilm. And, would you have want Warner buying Lucasfilm? Would you, want, Paramount? And you can see, the things that, like with Paramount and Star Trek, like they're trying, they're doing some things I don't like, but some things I might be into. So it's like, I don't think anyone really has, you don't have that singularity of vision like with Gene Roddenberry or George Lucas. It's all done by, groups and committees. And what you hope is that they get the spirit of it right.
Yeah.
And that, I'll take it for what it is. But, in watching some of Book of Boba Fett and you saw, like Black Crescenton, you're going, dude, I remember that from the comics. That's awesome. Or you see new characters that I wish they, like the twins, or you see, Madame Garza, moment of silence, please. But but you see, and you're just like, and how about the was it the major domo for the city of Mos Espa? And you're going, man, I was just thinking of him because in the Book of Boba Fett, like the preview of the cards, he has a nice card in there. I'm like, man, I can't wait to get his card because that's a character. It's kind of fun. You go, Pelimoto from The Mandalorian, and you're like, she's doing an awesome job. The gal that's doing her, I forget what her name is off the top of my head. But, it's just amazing some of these new characters. And so you're seeing old stuff and you're seeing new stuff. And I think it feels so much different than when we saw, Panda Baba in Rogue One, and you're like Cassian passes and you're like, okay, there's Walrus Man and there's the other guy. And you're like, all right. But now it's like, you're funny. You see these little Easter eggs and I think they're getting better at it. And they're trying to figure it out. And I go, look, just do your best, but at least you're doing it. And I got to figure, sometimes you might not make it, but I think with the series and when you're going back and you're seeing things tie back in, I think just as much as we have enjoyed now the extra content around the prequels and the ending of the Clone Wars, I think some of this will eventually pay off, like with what we're seeing with Mandalorian and Boba Fett, where you're seeing some of these holes filled in that, the movies are what they are. You can take them for what they are. But over time, you can kind of see other content being built around it. And as long as there's stuff going forward, I'm on board with it. Why not? Let's do it.
Nice. Nice. Well, are you ready for speed round?
All right. I'm going to give it a try here. There's nothing speed with me. So I think you've already figured that out.
Well, I'm with you. I'm over 50 as well. And so everything slows down. So here we go. But we'll try to be somewhat fast. All right. So favorite Star Wars movie?
I think at this point, I do have to say Rogue One because it's the movie that rose to meet me as an adult. And I loved it to death.
Nice.
And I believe you've already said the answer to this one, but your favorite character?
It's got to be Chirrut, although asterisk for Kanan Jarrus. Can't say enough.
Right. Empire or Rebellion?
It's got to be Rebellion. It's got to be my boys in the cockpits. There we go.
Very good. Very good. Favorite moment from any of the movies or series?
It has to be Kanan's death from Rebels, not just because I'm playing up to the reactions, folks. when you see the eyes change from blind to back to his own eyes, it's a really special moment. And I think when you see that, when you get all that from a cartoon, that emotion, and you know, you could see, you can hear her, you know, Hera scream Kanan, and when he blows her back in, that self-sacrifice there, I find it really hard to top. You know, you can say, of course, Kenobi in A New Hope, and you know, by the way, look at that scene now, a hell of a lot different. You know, think of, I was talking to somebody, I'm going to take a quick side from this. Think of Vader tamping down that robe and him slicing, quote unquote, slicing through. And you're going to go, you know what? I have to start looking at that scene a little differently, because what did he know? What didn't he know? He didn't think that was going to happen. Dun, dun, dun. Think about it before we see Kenobi. Enjoy it while it lasts.
Oh, let's throw that out there. Okay.
Nice. Okay.
All right. Well, here's the last question of the speed round.
Fair enough.
All right. Ready? Favorite soundtrack or song?
And I was struggling with this because as much as it's funny, because Duel of the Fates, I'm not good on the soundtracks as far as like the individual track names. That's one of my blind spots, is I don't have enough of the soundtracks, although I have really come to enjoy Duel of the Fates because you just hear that. But there is that theme, and I when Luke goes out in A New Hope, and you hear, you know, when he's looking at the twin suns, and you hear that. And a lot of times,
Binary Sunset.
Thank you. So when you hear that, because I think they've sampled that in a lot of different previews, mm-hmm. a lot of times the skin on my arms will go up, because, you know, some of those themes you'll hear over and over again, like from the Imperial March and whatnot, and you go, oh man, you know, it's amazing how they're in there, but, you know, like a good soundtrack, they don't make themselves known until like later. You go, oh man, I just love that. And they just heighten that sense. And you can see that in the different shows they have now, where they'll kind of go in and out of different ones, and they have so much to choose from. And of course, now we have John Williams coming back to do, I think, one more little bit. And so it's going to be fun. But yeah, I would say when I see Luke go up and look at the suns, and you see that when it fills in, and he's looking down like, gosh, I wish I'd be out there. You know, that's like, man, that's Star Wars to me.
Very good. Very good. Very good. Awesome.
You made it. Running me through the gauntlet, guys.
Well, that's the idea. Yeah. Keep you on your toes. So, all right. Perfect. Now, for our listeners, if they want to check out your podcast or follow you on social media, tell us how they can do that.
Fair enough. If you've made it this far and you want to learn some more, God help you. But you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Rebel Base Guard. I am also on Facebook. If you look for Rebel Base Guard there, you should be able to find, I do a lot of cross posts, and especially when cons are coming up, a lot of times the photo dump there makes a little more sense in the albums than like trying to dump it all on Instagram. I think we're all going to find out, if we make it to Celebration, just, you know, how little people are going to be like going to put up with like 1500 photographs of the same thing. The podcast, if you go into Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or Spotify, most major podcatchers, you should be able to look for the Rebel Base Guard podcast. Although you can, in the bios of Twitter and Instagram, you can also find it there. You can also find the Rebel Base Guard there. We are, what, 113 in? Some really nice shows that are coming up that I'm excited to post. It's just a matter of getting that time to do it. But it's going to be fun as a run-up to the convention season, which kicks off. There's a non-sport card show here in mid-May here in the western suburbs, and then there's Star Wars Celebration, and we have ScarifCon that's coming up in mid-July, Joliet Star Wars Day. There's a ton of stuff, so I'm excited because Have Mike will travel. And I think as podcasters, we're very fortunate that we can kind of record here, there, and anywhere and bring that. We have a little bit of edge over our video producing brethren and sisters who have to work a little harder than we do to put some stuff together.
Very true. Very true. Very good. And of course, you can get all of those links in the show notes there on our website as well. So make sure you check that out. stick around, Greg, because we're going to close out the show. And we, of course, figure since you've been here this long, you might as well close it out with us and participate in this week's Star Wars Dad Joke of the Week.
Fair enough. I'm all for it.
Perfect. David, if they want to contact you or talk Star Wars with you, how would they go about doing that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So at Twitter, I'm at David_Modders. M-O-D-D-E-R-S. There is an S in the end. Instagram is just simply look up David Modders. And then, of course, we have our email. Mine is David@StarWarsReactions.com.
Very good. Very good. Very good. And, of course, if you want to talk Star Wars with me, best way to do that is Twitter at TAHarris121079 or email me Aaron@StarWarsReactions.com. Of course, you can always follow the show on any of our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest are at SW Reactions, Twitter at SW Reactions Pod. Check us out there. Or, of course, you can email us show@StarWarsReactions.com as well. I do know, want to go ahead and say this real quick before we close out with our dad joke. I know our social media has been a little quiet the past couple weeks. That's something that I handle and I work on. But I have been having some visual issues, we'll say. So it's been more difficult to try to work on that. But hopefully here in the next week or two, after I visit a couple doctors, I'll be back up and we'll start seeing a lot more posting going on. Get our trading card Tuesdays going again.
Nice.
Get those back up and running. Cause I got it. David has got us a ton of cards to share and I want to share them. I just, have not been, able to do so as much as I'd like, cause it's been hard to see. So, but keep on the lookout for that. Give us a follow. They are coming back very soon. So,
yay.
So let's close things out like we always do. We have our dad joke of the week, Star Wars dad joke of the week. David, Greg, y'all ready for this?
Ready.
All right.
All right. What was Grogu's first word?
Okay. What was Grogu's first word?
I don't know, but it probably came after a second word. Like Yoda, he speaks.
Oh, man. That's so bad. That's funny.
Oh, Lord.
Nice.
Greg, my friend, it has been an honor having you on. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, no, the pleasure is all mine. I really appreciate you bringing me on and, once again, I hope, like I said, everybody, you know, feels better. I enjoy the takes that you both have, and it's fun seeing you online. It's even funner when I see the cards. But like I said, it's been fun to get to know you and, you know, even now get to know you a little better. You've been on the podcast, way back, I want to say episode 71. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's fun because it just strengthens our Star Wars fandom even more. And you know, like I said, do it as long as it makes it's still fun for both of you, but it's fun getting to listen to you, and I thank you for inviting me along for the ride tonight.
You're definitely welcome. We appreciate it. David, buddy, it's been a pleasure as always, my friend.
Oh man, love recording with you. So thankful Greg was on. He's just outstanding. And yeah, what a great night, buddy.
Absolutely. And we want to thank everybody for sticking with us and listening. We appreciate each and every one of you. Y'all are awesome. Y'all take care of yourselves. We're praying for you. We love y'all. Be kind. Be good to somebody. It'll make a difference in your life, and you'll have no clue how awesome it'll make you feel. Remember, this is your place for elegant discussion for a more civilized age.
If you'd like to share your thoughts, you can email us at show@StarWarsReactions.com. For our show notes and the latest news from the Star Wars universe, visit our website at www.StarWarsReactions.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at SWReactionsPod or on Facebook at Star Wars Reactions. If you enjoy our show, please leave a review on iTunes. This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or by Lucasfilm Limited. It's intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.StarWars.com. Star Wars. All names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and the respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Star Wars Reactions unless otherwise indicated. Star Wars Reactions. Elegant discussion for a more civilized age.